It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Milwaukee's mayor says the state's system for funding local services isn't working. We'll talk to two researchers who have studied shared revenue, how it works, and the impact it has on towns and cities like yours all over the state. First, the Fox Valley is one of the areas in Wisconsin seeing a growing new trend in senior living. They're called granny pods. Companies are building small external living quarters onto single-family properties, either as standalone structures or attached to an existing home. The idea is to give seniors the independence of living on their own while still being close to loved ones. It's not an option for everyone, but it highlights the ways that seniors and their families are dealing with the difficulties of finding senior housing. Our next guest has some guidance for how to navigate housing for our aging population, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you're dealing with right now as a senior yourself or someone working with a family member? What challenges are you seeing in the world of senior housing that covers a lot of territory? What kind of things are you looking for? Are you finding them in your area? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie Mulkey is director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Carrie, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. It's great to be with you.
Now, this was new to me. Have you seen much about these so-called granny pods or other similar sort of add-on housing alternatives for seniors?
I have. They've actually been around for quite some time, but I would say that as of late, these have they're becoming more popular as families are recognizing the benefits of having an older family member close by and as people are seeking low-cost alternatives.
Again, that's just one option. And a tricky thing talking about senior housing is that could cover everything from, you know, someone requiring a lot of regular, you know, medical check-ins and things like that to somebody living completely independently at all points in between. Can you talk about some of the variety of senior housing options people might be looking for?
Absolutely. So one of the you know, just calling out a challenge right away that I see is that I think there's a longstanding public perception that when we get old, we need to leave the place we're in and live somewhere else. And we have this image of the place, and it's not very pleasant sometimes. So along with this can come a stirring fear of loss and dread towards growing old, an assumption that as we grow old, we're going to lose our comfort and loss of home and loss of freedom and independence. But the reality is that there are a whole lot of options, including options for the home. For some people, it's as simple as moving a bedroom to the main floor, installing grab bars in the bathroom, removing rugs and things like that, making simple home modifications that can make a home safe for a long time, frankly, for a number of older adults. But then there's other older adults, of course, because we're also very diverse, that need a little bit more care and support. And the care and support can be provided in our own homes, and it can also be provided in facility-based care and with other community resources.
Now, we hear about a tough housing market lately for anybody. Forget about the age, high costs in some cases, a lack of availability. Is that making senior housing more of a challenge?
It certainly is, although in some parts of our state, actually, there's an abundance of certain types of facilities, like assisted living facilities, for example. But let me talk about costs for a minute, because I think, you know, that definitely we've been seeing that in all markets, and that is very true in senior living as well, across provider types, actually, of long-term care services and facilities. We are seeing steadily increasing costs. In fact, just, you know, last year, or the latest data we have from 2020 to 2021, we saw a 5% increase in the cost of assisted living facilities and adult day services across the country, and a 2% increase in nursing home costs. Now, those percentages may not sound big, but I don't know that everybody realizes how expensive some of these places can run. So, for example, a nursing home in Wisconsin can cost about $117,000 a year. And that would be for a private room, and even for a shared room or a semi-private room, that can run $108,000. Assisted living facilities are a little less expensive, but can still service sticker shock for people who see, you know, the annual median there is $54,000 per year, or about $4,600 a month. So the cost is steep in general, and the more that those costs, you know, increase, the harder it is for people to even consider some of these facilities, at least privately paying for them.
We're talking to Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources at Wisconsin's Department of Health Services, talking about senior living options, a wide variety. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is this your life right now? If you're getting older, trying to plan, you know, what's my next step? Where am I going to live next? Or can I make my current housing situation work as I get older? Looking at different facilities, are you a family member helping someone else deal with these things, search things out, make the decisions, share your experiences or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Carrie, suppose somebody is just starting this process, a senior maybe working with their family saying, okay, I like my house, but I see a point in the next couple of few years where I'm going to need to move out of here and something else. Can you define some of the options? Like, we hear a lot of different phrases like assisted living. Can you tell us a few of the different things that are maybe next steps and what they involve?
I really appreciate this question, because this is the time that it's really important to talk about it prior to needing some of these services and supports, excuse me. One thing I would say is that you don't need to do this alone. And Wisconsin has a really amazing resource, in fact, uniquely Wisconsin, called Aging and Disability Resource Centers. And they are available in every single community across the state. So I encourage you, if you are starting to think about what options are available to you locally, because I can talk about statewide options, and I'll do that in just a second. But each community has different resources available, and that Aging and Disability Resource Center in your community can help you sort through your own options, your own scenario, your own situation, and link you with what's available locally. So I encourage listeners to go to findmyadrc.org, and you'll be able to find contact information for your local resource center. That said, prior to contacting them, or, you know, even if you don't reach out to them, I do think it's really helpful to understand what some of those options are that are available to you. So starting from the services that can be brought into people's homes, I mentioned home modifications a little bit earlier. So sometimes just, you know, one-time services like that, where it's a one-time cost, you can install grab bars and so on. But then you can also pay for things like personal care, which can help people with activities of daily living, and some of the chore services that get a little harder as we age. So all of those and more are available in for people to stay in the home that they're in. Then for people who are maybe interested in leaving, that, you know, is sometimes people want to get out of their home, as they age or as things change. So assisted living is an umbrella term that we use. There's actually different types of assisted living in the state, and they have different regulations associated with them. We have community-based residential facilities, and which tend to be one room within a broader space, not always. But then we also have residential care apartment complexes, and the name gives it away. They're apartments. So these are places that have a little bit more space for people to live in. There's also smaller living arrangements, adult family homes, which is also a regulated setting. It tends to include people, three to four people that are living together and receiving care services in a home. I'm glad that you mentioned the ideas of granny flats or mother-in-law suites, the pods, you know, that people can you know, put on site, perhaps, of, you know, a family member. So there really are a whole lot of options, and the options vary across the state, and you don't have to do this alone. So reach out to those who can help facilitate this for you.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Sarah is with us now in Whitewater. Sarah, hi.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you so much for this topic. It's so on point with what my husband and I are going through right now. We've made a lot of modifications to the home to make things easier for him as he faces mobility issues. And we have not feared our next move by doing proper planning. And this is so on point for so many people. You don't have to leave your home. You absolutely don't. And if you do, my husband and I have decided we do need to go to a more temperate climate. We've turned it into something that's very exciting and planning to downsize into an area where there are same amenities that I can find in our beautiful home state of Wisconsin and yet a little better tempered climate for the two of us and surrounded by health care and surrounded by those things that he will eventually need. It certainly doesn't have to be scary as long as you plan ahead and treat it like the big adventure that it is.
Sarah, thanks so much for sharing that. Congrats on the planning. Maybe we can set up a cheese care package for you because the cheese, wherever you're going, isn't going to be as good. But Carrie, a big thumbs up, I imagine, to Sarah's message of planning to make it less scary.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. I wish I could change the climate. That isn't something I can offer up. But I agree with Sarah wholeheartedly. And I think, you know, what she raises for me too, which is an important point that I like to make in any presentation I give, is that we really need to change how we view aging. And it's instead of having it be a scary thing, something we fear, something we dread, there's a whole lot of benefit that comes from growing old, not just from an individual point of view, but our communities can benefit so much from having a growing aging population, which of course is happening in this state and all across the nation and the world, frankly.
Sarah, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, looking at the challenges and the opportunities when it comes to finding housing for seniors in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been in the market looking for your next step or helping maybe a parent or other loved one do the same? What has worked for you? What challenges have you found? Have you found ways to overcome those challenges? Do you have questions for our guest? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in Wisconsin's Department of Health Services. She's with us today with guidance on navigating housing for seniors, the different considerations we face when it comes to affordability, independence, health care needs, and more. You can still join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had an experience lately with the senior housing market? Are you making decisions right now for yourself or helping a loved one along? Are you finding things that you need where you need them? Or if you had to move, what are some of the biggest challenges you've encountered? Call in now at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, or your questions. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie, I think something a lot of families encounter at one point or another is, you know, as we get older, maybe I can live just fine independently, but I'm hitting a point where driving isn't an option anymore. And that can be, I think, a thing that drives an end to that sort of housing independence for some people. Are there ways around that? Are there ways to help people stay in their home when they in their post-driving career?
I appreciate this question because I often frame transportation as our entree into the world. So it is really important, especially with isolation and loneliness, you know, that can come with aging too. So this is a big policy area that we work on a regular basis. There are some communities that have different resources for transportation, whether it's public transportation or paratransit options. But for rural areas, it gets to be a little more challenging. So I do know that there's a lot of communities that have set up different mechanisms for driving folks together. And a lot of volunteerism is something that we're always looking for. So people who are willing to volunteer some of their time to drive family and friends around, community members, you know, even people they don't know, but who understand the importance of getting around and how important transportation is. So I think, you know, the other piece too is that we assume that people, I think, you know, losing your driver's license or, you know, out of concern, there's a lot of fear about losing your driver's license. And I think sometimes we take that driver's license away too soon. So I think it's important to have a true sense of where family members are at in terms of driving. And again, knowing what your options are, should you be struggling or when it is time perhaps to, you know, give up the keys and find other ways to get around.
Now, another challenge people may see, and I've seen this in my own family over the years, you know, say a couple, one spouse is developing more and more healthcare needs past the point where their spouse can really do that for them, but maybe short of the point where they want to go and live in some kind of assisted care facility. Are there things out there to help people with, you know, some sort of in-home care?
Absolutely. There are many, many, many options for that. And, you know, first, let me just say thank you to all of the people who are serving as caregivers out there. In fact, that is what the biggest way that long-term care services are being provided is it's from spouses and other family members. And so one thing I want to add quickly is that there is support for caregivers because we acknowledge and understand how important their role is. And so ways to avoid that burnout, ways to avoid some of the physical, you know, issues that can come if we have to help with transporting somebody and physically, you know, with mobility issues and those sorts of things. So first, reach out if you are a caregiver that, you know, is struggling. We do want to help you to sustain you in that role and find happiness in that space. If it gets to be to the place, of course, where you physically can't do it anymore, mentally, emotionally, all those things that can occur. Again, there's just a number of in-home services that can assist you in, again, whether it's things like help around the house or mowing the lawn or a lot of those daily sorts of activities that we have to do to stay in our own homes and also to care for ourselves. So this home health care is readily available in many parts of the state. One thing I'd also mention is that we are, some people frame it as a crisis, and I guess I would echo that in that we are actually losing a number of people in our direct care workforce for both home care services and in facility-based care. So this is another big policy, you know, question that we're working towards. Last, what I would say is, it's okay to rely on our neighbors. I think we need to do that a little more. Being good community members and you know, building relationships across our neighborhoods can also be a tremendous source of help for caregivers or people especially where there's one person who really needs help and another person who's providing that level of care for someone.
Let's go back to our callers with Bruce on the line in Green Bay. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Bruce?
Well, I was long-term care insurance. That made the same policy for 10 years, my wife and I, at the same rate. Now, they send me a letter telling me in the next 3 years I can expect a 75% increase in my premiums. That doesn't seem right.
Bruce, thanks for the call. Bruce, having long-term care insurance, seeing his policies go up, Carrie, is that something you've been running into?
Absolutely, and I am not an expert in long-term care insurance, I will admit, but I do know that there are some pieces of advice I guess I would have for your callers related to this, is that I think it's really important to, of course, read the fine print, as it is with most things that we're purchasing. We do know that sometimes, so it's not just about increasing costs, but sometimes the long-term care insurance doesn't cover what people think it will cover. So for example, some long-term care insurance doesn't cover home care. So as we've been talking about that a lot here in the last half an hour, there are some policies that don't cover, you know, all the benefits and some of the options that people want to choose or select when it comes time to use their long-term care insurance. So here too, there are people who can help you sort through some of this, and you can find them at the Aging and Disability Resource Center. benefit specialists are the position title, so to speak, of the folks that can help you sort through a lot of those issues before you make purchases or over time if you have questions about them.
Bruce, thanks for that call. And Carrie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. She was with us today to help us with some of the top considerations and challenges facing people looking for all the different kinds of senior housing. We heard a note, got a note, Stella in Sturgeon Bay called in, couldn't stay on the line. Strongly recommends finding caregiver support networks in your area. If you're someone who is providing care for a spouse or other loved one in this situation, she says seek out these caregiver support groups. And you could still share your own, maybe, suggestions for others. If you've learned a lesson, found a great support in your area, tell us about it. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and let us and everybody else know about it. Coming up after the news, we'll take a close look at Wisconsin's shared revenue system that helps fund local government services like libraries and fire stations. A lot of local leaders in cities and towns around the state saying they may not be getting their fair share of revenue that goes to the state level. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, new research looks at the relationship between cash bail and high incarceration rates and what can be done to improve the system. Now, Milwaukee rolled out its latest city budget this week, and it includes staffing cuts to firefighters, libraries, and the police department, though the dollar amount for police goes up. In a speech to Milwaukee's Common Council, Mayor Cavalier Johnson zeroed in on two causes: the state system that helps fund local services, known as shared revenue, and a state-imposed limit on how much local governments can raise in taxes and fees.
We are tightly constrained by limited revenue. In fact, constrained is not the right word. We're hamstrung. We're forced to cut long-established services because we simply just don't have the money that we need.
We're taking a look at how these state policies affect the health of local governments around the state and what it means for services in your community. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What local services are important to you? Libraries, parks, police, maybe all of the above. Have you seen cuts to any of those services in your own community? Do you think cities, local governments, should be able to raise, say, a 0.5% sales tax like counties are able to do right now? Or take off property tax limits? Are there changes you'd like to see? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rob Henken is president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Jason Stein is research director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Pleased to be here. Thank you.
Now, Rob, you at Policy Forum have written a couple of reports related to shared revenue. First of all, can you tell us, what do we mean when we talk about our shared revenue system in the state? How does the money flow?
So essentially, this is a system that dates all the way back to 1911, when the state first established a state income tax. And state leaders at the time said essentially that we are going to preserve for state government the ability to levy income taxes. We are not going to allow our local units of government to do the same. But in return, we're going to make a commitment that some portion of the income taxes we collect as the state will be shared with our local units of government. Essentially, the same principle also has been followed with regard to the sales tax over time, with the exception, as you noticed in your opening, or said in your opening, that counties are allowed to do a 0.5-cent sales tax. So when we talk about the shared revenue program, it's an appropriation in the state budget that exists for both counties and for municipal governments. The state appropriates funds every year. Those are distributed via a formula, and it constitutes a form of revenue sharing, whereby state government is sharing those sources of revenue that it is able to collect exclusively with those local units of government. As I'm sure we'll get into, the problem is that over time, that sharing principle has really diminished to the point of even disappearing. That appropriation, the overall state appropriation for the shared revenue program, has essentially stayed the same in non-inflation adjusted, so just nominal terms, has not gone up for the past 25 years or so. And that clearly is squeezing local units of government.
And Jason, Rob mentioned income tax and sales tax. That leaves property tax, which local governments can assess, but even there are limits. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So in Wisconsin, for cities, villages, counties, technical college districts, they live under what is called levy limits. And essentially what that is it limits the property taxes that they levy for their operating budget, for their ongoing operations, can't rise by any more than the percentage increase essentially in new construction or development in that local government's territory. And, you know, there are a number of communities from Milwaukee, the large city, to, you know, many small towns in the state that are just not getting very much new construction every year. Even when inflation was 1.5% to 2% a year, they weren't necessarily getting that. And now that we have inflation at, you know, 8% or 9% a year, they're certainly not getting that.
I want to give a listen now to Jerry Deshane, head of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. This is him talking back in May to the morning show here on the Ideas Network about how this all affects local communities.
There's a disconnect with how well the state is doing with its budgets and how challenged local governments are doing. And the bottom line, it's because the system we have doesn't work. The system is supposed to share money from the state to local governments. That's just not happening.
And Rob, that's what you were pointing to just a few moments ago. Where is that leaving local communities, like whether we're talking about the biggest city, Milwaukee, or smaller cities and villages around the state?
So there is a distinction. It based on the way the formula has been developed over time, clearly larger cities and particularly city governments that are poorer in nation or in nature than wealthier jurisdictions receive bigger shared revenue payments. So a city like Milwaukee, 20 years ago, roughly 40% of Milwaukee's overall general purpose budget was comprised of shared revenues from the state. So if a revenue source that is 40% of your overall budget is never going up, that's going to have a much bigger consequence for you than, say, a smaller municipality where maybe it's only 5 or 10% of their budget. That said, shared revenue is a very important revenue source for dozens, if not hundreds, of cities and villages across the state of Wisconsin. And the fact that, again, this source of revenue is not increasing from year to year is putting more pressure on the other major source of revenue, which is the property tax, which in the case of Milwaukee has now somersaulted above shared revenue. So it used to be that shared revenue was about 40% of the budget, property taxes in the low 20s. Now that has been completely reversed. But as Jason said, because of the restrictions on the property tax, you really have what amounts to a fiscal straitjacket for those local governments that are really highly dependent on these two sources of revenue.
Talking to Rob Henken and Jason Stein about how we fund local governments in Wisconsin, the biggest cities, the smallest towns, all points in between, and the idea of shared revenue. Money flows in income and sales tax to the state. Some of it flows back to the local governments. Local governments say, not enough anymore. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your comments, your questions. Are there changes you'd like to see made? Are you someone involved in creating a budget at the local level? How does this affect your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Now, Jason, I had, you know, because of my job here, a rough idea of how this works in Wisconsin. What I didn't really realize till reading your reports is what an outlier Wisconsin is compared to all the other Midwestern states. Can you talk about ways in which things are really run differently here?
Sure. I mean, the big difference is, you know, we get about the same share of our local government budgets from taxes in Wisconsin as other states in the Midwest. The difference is, you know, for local governments in the state, particularly cities and villages, you know, the property tax is almost the only game in town for them. They have a little bit, you know, some municipalities have room taxes. They get a little bit from that. Some municipalities have local vehicle registration fees, but the reality is the property tax accounts for more than 90% of all local government taxes in the state. And so when you think about the constraints on that, that makes it difficult. In other states in the Midwest, it's common to see cities and villages, or cities at least, have sales taxes that they can levy. You do see some states like Michigan and Ohio with municipal income taxes. And so the difference is, in Wisconsin, about the same share of the budget comes from taxes, but it's not a mix of taxes. It's just one.
It's Brianna Caller at 800-642-1234. Mac is with us in Milwaukee. Mac, hello.
Hi. I think one thing that's typically elided in this conversation is that by this point, it has to be on purpose. The Republicans in the state legislature and the assembly, they're straitjacketing Milwaukee and other metropolitan areas because they control the purse strings, and they don't want metropolitan areas to be able to control themselves, or municipalities to be able to fund parks and do nice things. And it then reinforces their narrative that those places are broken, and they can further demonize those places and impoverish them. And it's really sad. I don't see a way out, but it's more of a political dynamic as well as a fiscal one.
Mac, thanks for the call. Rob, I don't know if you want to get into the partisan politics behind this, but has there been a strong case to be made for doing the things the way we do them now, and funding from the state to the local governments at the level we're doing now? Has there been an argument saying, yeah, we're doing it right?
So I think, again, we try very hard not to get into the motivations of different lawmakers and the politics of what's going on. I will say that the point at which the shared revenue pot stopped growing was at around the same point in time that the state made a very consequential decision to try to fund 2/3 of the cost of public K-12 schools. Clearly, the state of Wisconsin has had its own budget constraints. And one of the things that we did see, whether deliberately or not, was this greater commitment to K-12 schools resulted in less of a commitment to cities and villages and counties and towns. And that's just the way it has played out. That said, again, a case can be made, without getting into any political or other motivation, that the state has indeed, as one would certainly have hoped, as our economy has grown, the state has seen increases in its collections of these forms of taxation that it has preserved for itself in terms of the ability to levy those. And it is the notion of sharing that really has ceased over the past couple of decades.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Rob Henken and Jason Stein from Wisconsin Policy Forum with us today for a look at the way Wisconsin funds local services, the parks, the police, all that local stuff, why some local leaders, mayors, and others say the system isn't working, the money is flowing to the state, not enough of it flowing back. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How is this affecting your community? Do you have questions about how this all works. Would you like to see more revenue go from the state budget to your local community, or rely more on local property taxes to meet your local needs? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about Wisconsin's system to fund local government services. Rob Henken and Jason Stein with the Wisconsin Policy Forum stay with us. That organization has put out a couple of recent studies looking at shared revenue in Milwaukee and around the state, how it affects local governments, where people are seeing shortfalls in local funding, maybe looking for changes. And you could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. Should, say, a city be able to levy its own sales tax, which it can't do right now, maybe an extra 0.5% like counties can right now? Do you think cities should have more, or local governments should have more latitude to raise property taxes in the absence of direct sales and income tax? Call in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jason, that local sales tax idea, some people pointed toward, you know, if I'm successful in my local city, I'm bringing in business, maybe bringing in events like a major political convention or something, I'm not really going to get a taste of that because it's going to bring in sales tax money, and the sales tax money goes to the state. Is there a thought that, hey, maybe letting that local government do this directly might help solve some of this?
Sure. I mean, I think the traditional argument has been, well, that's true that you don't get directly from these consumers, but, you know, they spend money at hotels, they spend money at restaurants, stores, that sort of thing, and that those businesses in turn pay property taxes. The reality is, though, that you're not going to get an increase in property taxes because that's linked purely to what development there is. So, you know, it's only if you get so much tourism for such a sustained period of time that you actually start doing new development that would actually, you know, generate the revenue for the local government. So that's been the argument for the sales tax. The other argument would be that, you know, commuters pay that in a way that, you know, people that say commute in to work in a large urban area in a way that they don't with their property taxes, where they're paying them wherever their residence is.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in Richland Center. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call. So I'm on the county board of Richland County, and we are right in the middle of this problem. We're looking at going to a referendum to try and see if the voters, you know, want to raise some of their raise their taxes to handle services. But that means we're also looking at, do we cut services if we don't pass it, and trying to keep the wages up to make sure we get good quality people in our offices is tough if we don't have that flexibility. So I guess my question is, if your guests have heard referendum ideas, successful ways of doing that, their thoughts and their input would be helpful.
And Bob, could I ask, I want to make sure we're all talking about the same thing. You're looking at raising the ceiling on your local property taxes, I'm guessing, which you would have to do under state law to raise those property taxes?
Yeah, so for our operating budget, the only way we can raise it, because our net new construction isn't high enough to do anything with, then we need to go to a referendum, which the statute allows. And at that point, we can increase our operating budget in that manner.
I gotcha. Bob, thanks a lot for that call. Rob, are we seeing communities around the state do this? Say, hey, we're going to go to voters to try to get this exemption from that property tax limit.
Yes, there's no question that we're seeing an increasing number of local governments, both municipal governments and county governments, turning to referendum. We have seen this over the past decade or so with regard to school districts. Our organization has tracked this. The number of referenda have increased dramatically, the size, and also the approval rate. Interestingly, school districts operate under their own revenue limits. We are not seeing as many counties, though I'm beginning to hear about that more. Certainly in the southeast part of the state, we're seeing more municipal governments going very specifically to voters to ask for authorization to exceed property tax levy limits, specifically for police and fire positions. Those tend to be the areas that are really stretched thin. Neither police nor fire is are subject to the Act 10 restrictions on collective bargaining. And they're, obviously, these are public safety positions. It includes EMS as well, that tend to be prioritized by local governments. And so there's no question that this is a manifestation of the many, many years of seeing revenues constricted for both counties and municipalities.
Bob, thanks a lot for that call. Jason, the flip side of Bob's question there is, if they don't get these revenue increases, they're going to be looking at maybe serious cuts. Is that something we're seeing? We're seeing this new budget proposal in Milwaukee. Is this a common thread you're seeing of difficult choices in funding cuts?
Sure. I mean, you know, obviously we've also documented over the past 20 years that Wisconsin has seen a bigger drop in its overall state tax burden. So taxes as a share of income of practically any state in the country. So, you know, and that includes, you know, what's happened with our property tax. Our property tax ranking has dropped somewhat. So obviously on the one hand, that's a benefit to the state. On the other hand, you know, in Wisconsin, we have a government that's set up that services are delivered more at the local level than in many other states. Certain services, in particular in Wisconsin, police and law enforcement is really heavily local. In all states, fire and EMS is, you know, exclusively local practically. And so, you know, you do have those issues about whether or not there's the funding needed to carry through with some of these services. You're also seeing a lot of small communities. You know, we've talked a lot about larger communities, but you're seeing many towns also have struggles in areas like EMS, where they've traditionally relied on volunteers to respond to a limited number of emergency calls. As the population ages, you're getting more emergency calls, and you're having more difficulty finding, you know, volunteers or paid on call staff that who can, you know, show up and get there in time for these emergencies on a timely basis.
Thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. I agree with earlier calls that there's politics in here and there's also practical impact. When you've got the state government sitting on a pot of money and local governments short, it makes sense, especially since that's a point of shared revenue, to share it. Milwaukee's got its budget problems, including for the police force. And one of the candidates for running for governor is talking about wanting to fire our DA, but not talking about sending money our way to help boost local government, including for the police force. And to make things worse, I think some people in the state legislature actually want to cut further. I think last year they were discussing cutting local transit funding and stuff like that. So this is wrongheaded in my mind.
Nate, thanks for the call. In our last minute or so, Rob, you know, shared revenue is not necessarily a word on the top of mind for everybody. Doesn't really come up a lot in political debates. Are you hoping whatever people think needs to be done, are you hoping to put it on the map as an issue that people are thinking about?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, again, and this is a healthy thing for governments to take a look periodically at the way that their structures are set up. In this case, the structure for ensuring that local governments in the state have the capacity to provide the services that constituents want and at the levels that they want. But perhaps I'd like to close by saying, you know, maybe there's a piece here that both sides of the political spectrum can agree upon, and that's service sharing. We think that there is still a lot of untapped potential for local governments and local governments with their county governments to look at ways that they can share and consolidate services. And it's not just to save money and to respond to these revenue constraints, but it's also to improve service effectiveness and efficiency. So maybe there's some common ground there that can be talked about at the same time we're talking about these very real issues with regard to both shared revenues and property tax levy limits.
Thanks to both of our guests today. We've been talking to Rob Henken and Jason Stein from the Wisconsin Policy Forum with us today to talk about how Wisconsin funds local services, a system known as shared revenue. some of the challenges currently facing that system, shortfalls in a lot of communities, and some ideas for improving it. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, the Asian carp is an invasive species in the Midwest. Find out about the latest efforts to keep it out of the Great Lakes. That's tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Earlier this week, I talked to Grant and Martha from the show A Way with Words about new words in the English language just added to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. We checked out some of those new words, phrases, and definitions, including yeet, pumpkin spice, drip, and more. Now, you could play along in an online contest. The Washington Post wants you to submit a short poem of 8 lines or less that includes a selection of those new words and phrases in the dictionary. You can make up to 25 submissions. Entries are due by next Tuesday night. It'd be awesome if Wisconsin could claim some top honors. So if you're adorkable, you can level up your poetry game, maybe even start a side hustle if you're successful. Just a few of the words there that are in the contest. I'm going to sit it out. My poetry skills are sus, possibly even janky. Yeet, this is Central Time.